Hey. Hey everybody, this is Ed from My Figure Universe, and I'm here this week with VHS Jace. You know him from Talking Tubi, the Captain's Quadrant, and a litany of other projects all across the vast universe that is the internet. VHS Jace, welcome. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much, Ed, for having me on. It's an honor to be able to have a chat to you. And yeah, this
Yeah,
is
I've been
great.
looking forward to it since yesterday.
Yes. Yes, we did film something yesterday together over on the Captain's Quadrant. It was absolute delight
Yeah, I had a
to
good
have you
time.
on.
I had a good
And
time.
it was an episode that I actually liked,
Oh,
which is a
well.
rare thing if you're watching Captain's Quadrant this season for me. So yeah, it was a lot of fun to have you on.
Wait a minute, you liked the episode of the Captain's Quadrant because I was there, or you liked it because it was a good episode of Star Trek?
Column A and Column B, my friend. It is both.
We'll take a
There
little of this, a little of that.
you go.
But no, I'm well aware that as we're recording this, it's Father's Day there in Australia, so happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you very much. My kids actually just came this morning for breakfast, spent some time with me, and the kids who are, I call them kids, but one's 30 and one's 25 now. They brought me a present today, which I'm very happy with because I'm a Nintendo fanatic, and that's the new Donkey Kong Bonanza. So there goes several more hours of my life
Oh,
playing
you
that
hear
game.
that, Nintendo? Sponsor us.
Please do sponsor him. Absolutely. Throw me a free t-shirt occasionally, I'd be thrilled.
Now, I haven't had a chance to play the Switch 2. We do have the Switch 1. We have that, and we got a lot of good games, the Marios and the Star Trek games that were available. But is it
Yeah.
backwards compatible? I mean,
Oh well, I still think we're running it is a backwards compatible via consoles.
okay.
It's not universal. Like I've got to use the PAL version, you'd use an NTSC version. It is backward compatible. And what it does actually, the good thing about Switch 2, it actually locks in all the old Nintendo Switch games to 60 frames a second. Which, if
Good.
you think about a lot of the games, whether it was Zelda, whether it was any racing games, even Animal Crossing. Pretty smooth, but sometimes it would judder. You just don't get that anymore with the Switch 2. Certain games have actually upgraded it quite significantly. But it's not without its controversy. I was very lucky to get it day of release, but the price point makes it very hard, I think, at the moment for people. Like the games the kid bought me in Australian dollars, and I'll equate it to American dollars, was $129 for a video game, which would equate to about $80 in America.
Yeah.
Which is exactly at the moment, if you go into wherever video game stores, you're paying $80 for a video game.
That's, I mean, here's my thing too. And a lot of times with video games like that, you're not, okay, I can't speak for the Switch 2, but I can for Xbox. You're not getting the whole game. It's like you're buying a piece of the game and then you've got to buy the
Oh.
DLC to get the rest of it. And that's, there's nothing more furious, frustrating than, not getting what you want,
Well, the other thing is a lot of time they rush these things in developments and they're not even ready from a limited standpoint from the actual game engine and graphics. And then, yeah, you're buying 80% of a game because you've got to buy the in-game purchases or, your add-ons. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I will speak for me. I assume it was the same for you. That was something inconceivable growing up as a kid. You bought the game, that was the game. There were
Well, I
no
agree.
updates. There were no extra levels. That was it.
Well, I agree. And that's like when you talk about $80 for a game, I think back to Christmas of 1990. I'll think back, going to the store, going to Toys R Us, picking up $80. Maybe I had $100 for Christmas. That's five games. That's,
100%.
yeah. And that's,
100%.
I guess this is, we're just old. That's, but.
Well, I still can't believe it. I mean, like, it's still my favorite console out of all the consoles. I do love Nintendo. And the reason is because, yes, they're bright, happy, and colorful. Like, they're usually very technically difficult to master. And I like the combination of both. I also, to be honest with you, found myself going down a very dark hole with first-person shooters from a mental health perspective. I was a big Call of Duty fan. And obsessively would go to work, come home, put a couple of hours in a night. And then over time, one day I realized that I really had a negative headspace because of that environment.
Yeah.
Like, even though it's just a video game, but you're killing people nonstop for 2 hours a day. You're generally in some sort of conflict verbally with someone online at some point for your gaming experience. I found it a very negative influence on myself. So I did step away from a lot of those other kind of first-person shooters now, and I play more games that give me joy.
Yeah.
That make me feel good and frustrated. Don't get me wrong. There'll be times that I go, damn you, Mario. Can't beat this level, but just the idea of not, you know, digging into murder and mayhem every night was a
well, you're not alone.
Choice I made.
You're not alone. I used to play like Modern Warfare 3 all the time, and it was something I was good at it. Halo, I played Halo. I mean, I still like my Halo, but I don't play as regularly as I used to. I love puzzle games. I like something where, like even Minecraft, I like something where I can be creative, and then if I want to blow it up, I'll blow it up. But you know, stuff like that. I love, man. I just something fun like that. I love the Star Wars games. I love those. Like the Jedi Survivor games. And you put me in front of those, I'll play them all day long. Or have you ever tried No Man's Sky?
No, I haven't, but I hear great things about
It's
it. My
so
son keeps
addictive.
talking about it. Yeah, I heard it's pretty incredible. So, and the thing is, with my work setup, I actually have two computers that have been designed very much like you design a high-end gaming machine because of my job, which is a videographer. Yeah. They're editing machines. And they have the same attributes. What you need to have a good editing machine is the same as what you would need for a high-end PC gaming machine. You need lots of, you know, really solid processor, lots of memory, really good graphics card. But I never use them for gaming because, you know, the one behind me, I generally render graphics on, like motion graphics from After Effects. And this one is I use for either podcasting or, you know, editing video. So, it's funny how that, you know, and gaming very much has tied into my career. I think one of the reasons I'm successful enough editor that I get the work and my business is still viable after all these years is because gaming taught me concentration. I can sit in front of it and edit for hours on end, and it bothers a lot of people can't do it, but I have zero problem with it. I love it.
I understand. Editing is something I enjoy doing too. It's almost therapeutic. It's like, even it doesn't matter if it's a photograph or a video or something else. It's something.
Could be that, it doesn't matter what it is. It's the creation, isn't it?
Exactly. That's, I mean, you see the things that I do for just a simple Instagram page. It's because I have a look, I have a feel that I want, and I want everything to be uniform. And so, and then that spreads across to this. I want everything to be uniform, and I take, I can't say I take great pains because I'll be honest with you, I don't think of it as a pain. My wife is constantly like, "Oh, don't get stressed." I'm like, "No, I'm not getting stressed. You know, this is fun." Now you're
I
editing.
Love it, by the way. I do love your designs and stuff that. And something I try to do. I mean, certainly to some success. Other times, my biggest problem is I'm not very good with designing things and then somebody else taking over and touching it. I found myself like a painter who, you know, does a painting and would be horrified if someone came up with a paintbrush and started painting. That's my only problem with designs, especially even with clients. Like I'll design stuff for clients as templates and that, and then I'll maybe see their page and see what they've done to it. It's like, why are you using that font over this backdrop I've created? Why are you positioning the photo the way you've done?
In some ways, I think it was Rembrandt. Maybe I'm thinking it's Rembrandt. Rembrandt was known for if he would finish a painting, they were never actually finished. He would sell a painting to someone, he would go to their house and visit, and then he would change the painting when they would leave the room. You know?
That's and so cool.
It's like, so it's a control thing, and I understand. Like I could never, like I used to run a professional wrestling fan group on Facebook, just a group. And I hated it when anybody posted anything other than me because it looked terrible. Wanted it's just like you're not fitting my look and feel. So I was like, I'd give it like an hour, 2 hours, and I'd delete it and be like, oh, I don't know what happened. You know? It's like
Yeah, I I had to learn to let it go. I had to learn to let it go and just go, look, I know what my intention is. I know what I delivered. If it's being changed and altered, what can you do? And you kind of, what you said with Rembrandt kind of reminds me, my attitude towards work and podcasting too is the fact that you never really complete anything. You're abandoned. Like people, you know, go like, oh, did you finish that job? Yeah, well, like I abandoned it because time won't let me keep going. Because I will constantly touch up, go over videos again, make adjustments. So I love the fact that there's timelines because then I'd have to deliver it to a client. And as long as they're happy, I'm happy.
Yeah.
So if they come back to me and go, this is amazing, this is great, that's good, but it's generally not my opinion. Now people go, oh, did you make a good video? Well, that's not my choice to make. Like, that's your choice. If you watch it and go, that was terrible, that's the reaction you had. If you look at it and go, it's great, yeah. But I don't know about you, I find myself a tough critic on my stuff. I'm never happy.
I had a really bad problem when I was young. I'd say it started around fifth grade. I would draw and paint, and people would tell me how good something was, so I would destroy it. I hated positive criticism. I didn't want that there, and I was a smartass about it to the point that. And we had to do an art project, I remember once, and it was supposed to be a painting, and it was going to get put into a competition locally for the area where I lived. So I didn't care. I just painted the most childlike painting I could, and I won. And I just remember being so angry, you know, like this is terrible, and you still think it's good.
No, I laugh because I've had that happen with a job where I was angry at the client. So I did a basic job and they thought it was amazing. And I don't know how you felt, but I felt angry because, like, you've cheated me from an opportunity to show you how good I am in a way. That's how my mind was processing it. It's like I was angry at them for saying it was good. I wanted them to reject it and force me into. Yeah, the head games you play, I think, when you get into designing video and all that kind of thing, that you generally play on yourself can be quite interesting when you're sitting in a room editing for 10 hours.
Yeah.
So I balance that with obviously having a very stable home life. I have a beautiful wife who I've known 30 years, and she's been long-suffering and married to me for 25. So I have a great home life and all that. But how I deprogram from editing and things like that is a Lego. I'm a big Lego collector. I've got a lot of Lego. And I do that because people go, oh, well, oh, yeah, you're a creative person. You must. No, I do not create anything with Lego. I use it in a sense. I'll buy a Lego kit. I get to follow the instructions. So it's the opposite of creativity. I'm just like manufacturing. I'm following it step-by-step guide. And I found that is very good to bring my headspace back. You know, I find it very therapeutic. And the tactileness of putting those Lego pieces together. Something unique about Lego, like versus Mega Blocks or anything like that, Lego, the way they put together is almost you get a slight, tiny bit of endorphin rush when things kind of go together. And so, yeah, Lego's big. It's the thing that I do. Besides podcasting and doing corporate videos and stuff, that's the one thing for me that helps me, you know.
Well, that's nice to know. I never would have guessed that.
It's an expensive way. I bring people into my house and there's, you know, there's shelves of Lego and all that kind of thing. And they look at it and go, wow. And I go, if you want to know how my mental health's been going this year, check it out. Meaning the more stressed I am, the more Lego kits I've gotten.
Well, the more I keep hearing about the proposed theoretical Star Trek Lego set, and
strong rumors. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, oh, it's like, I like Lego. I love Star Trek, but I can't do that. I don't have the room. I don't have the money. I won't have the time.
It's the money. It's the money. Yeah. Because, you know, if they do it, there is no way is the D going to be. It's either going to be a small one, or if they do a bigger one, kind of Millennium Falcon Lego size, that could be $1,500.
Yeah.
Like, I love Lego, but I can't justify that. And as much as I dream of having Star Trek in the Lego family, yeah. It'd be rough. It'd be
I
rough.
think.
To, and plus, then I'd get obsessive, like I did with Star Wars for a while. I had to learn to stop buying Lego Star Wars because it was getting out of control.
Yeah. I think if they do, if they do end up making them, I would want a little Sisko. That'd be the only thing I'd want. Just give me a little tiny Sisko,
You'll get
minifig.
that. You would get that. I can guarantee, like the designs that I've seen, and the rumors are really credible at this point that Lego will have a relationship with Paramount moving forward. I think it's part of the deals that are happening in the background, is the fact that they go to great lengths to satisfy the fandom that they're representing. Look at
Yeah.
what they've done with Star Wars. I mean, the diversity in product within Lego alone, within Star Wars, where you could have ships, you can have play sets, you can have like portraits. There's so many different ways that they take advantage of the IP that they're using, that Star Trek will be so well served. And what a delight to get that license, because you're going like, well, okay, I've got 60 years to draw from now, haven't I? Like, and you don't lose at any step of the way. If
Yeah.
you bring out the first two a the TOS Enterprise, that's going to fly off the shelves. Same in next gen. You imagine what happens when they come out with a Deep Space Nine like kit,
Oh,
people.
be massive.
That's when you're going to get your Sisko, your Jake, your Odo. You know, you're going to get every your Worf. You're going to get everybody in those minifigs. You know, so yeah, I think it's really because even if you've made stuff from Discovery, everyone's going to buy it, no matter what they're going to come out with Star Trek and Lego. It is huge sellers for them. There's no
Yeah,
doubt
I
about
would imagine. I mean, I the only real experience I have with Lego is through my nephew. He collected for years Mario, anything Mario, and it never ends. It's
it
there's
never
more
ends.
and
Still
more and
going.
more.
I recently sold the question mark block, which was a
Right.
big kit that opened right up. I was done with Mario because it was crazy. Like, they've just come out with Legend of Zelda sets now, and I'm a massive Legend of Zelda. You know, they've got the Deku Tree at the moment. I'm like, oh. But, you know, there you go.
Yeah, Zelda's come up a couple of times in conversations today. I love Zelda.
Yeah, I've played every iteration there is. Massive in the game. The film, the development of the film, I'm very interested in by Wes Ball and the team they're going to have to get together, who are generally known for being behind the Planet of the Apes, the recent Planet of the Apes
Okay.
series. So they're the guys behind this new Zelda film, which, if you actually just think about the quality of filmmaking, means it's in safe hands. So, yeah, I'm
Yeah.
very interested. It's like Zelda is, man, I don't think I've played anything more than Zelda hours wise. You know?
I think the closest I would come, like I haven't played, I think maybe Breath of Wind was probably the last one I played.
Yeah.
But man, I have to say Grand Theft Auto is probably up there with my most. Oh no, I gotta go right back to No Man's Sky. I swear I played it every
Yeah.
day. Solid for 2 years. Just it's if you're, I mean, if you love Star Trek and you love video games, I recommend No Man's Sky 100%. It's
Great.
the closest you're gonna get to, I mean, unless you go with like what was that one that came out with Elias Defexis doing the voice?
Yeah, no, I can't keep up with the names of
Yeah,
them.
I can't
I'm
think of
getting
that
old, I
one.
forget the names.
It was I don't know, but it
Star
was a what's that?
So Star Trek and gaming has had a really interesting, you know, kind of history, because you would think automatically that Star Trek is a natural fit for a video game. But I think we need to be honest and say it has been a challenge for the video game industry to find the right formula for Star Trek in
Yeah.
regards to what type of genre, what the audiences want. Do they want, like, because it's hard. We all love Star Trek for different reasons, right? Like,
Right.
over on the Captain's Quadrant, Joe loves, like, what attracted him to Star Trek with the ships, the
Yeah.
technology, the mechanical stuff and all that. And he loves that stuff. And it's an absolute valid way to come into it. Jason, you know, kind of just part of his DNA. He's growing up with him. You know, I came to Star Trek from being a junior guy who saw the films and was asleep in 1979 Sorry, like 1979 Sting Star Trek motion picture. I was asleep in like 20 minutes. But Star Trek 2 making a massive impact, you know, only a couple of years later being, how old was I then? 1982. I was nine. So seeing, and that made a, you know, crazy impact. But then it wasn't until I was about 15 or 16 that Next Generation, because here in Australia, we weren't getting prime time weekly releases of the show. They would show different episodes out of order, play it late at night. We actually, here in Australia, most of the fans watched it through VHS.
Yeah.
Renting it. So we'd get two episodes per tape. And that's where I found it, 15 and 16. And what attracted me, because I'm a big film nerd, was the quality of storytelling. Like, I locked in my favorite episode of Star Trek to this day is probably Measure of a Man.
Oh, okay.
Which is a bottle episode, very much a bottle episode. But it was the heart of Star Trek. You know, what I always loved about The Next Generation was it wasn't only a future that looked cool. The fact that we reasoned things out with discussion was their primary way of problem solving. I loved because, you know, I'm like being a film nerd, and I was taken to a lot of films that, you know, I was taken to films like on Golden Pond when I was too young, or I got dragged to see Raging Bull at the cinema. I got to see things I should not have been seeing.
I can relate to that.
But I'm definitely educated. Yeah.
No, I saw The World According to Garp when I was five.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There you go. And so what it did, it created an expectation from films is a little bit unique than maybe someone who's a casual fan, you know. They go for the explosions, all that. Well, for me, it's all about meat on the bones, which probably explains my criticism of this year of Star Trek with Strange New Worlds was my frustration with the lack of quality in the scripting.
Yeah.
More so than anything else. Because I think the cast is incredible. I think that who deserves all the accolades is the casting department of Star Trek. Like, they deserve all the accolades. The person that turned around and went, we'll hire Anson Mount, we'll have Rebecca Romijn and Ethan Peck, and we're going to bring them into they're the guys that we'll have in a two-parter in Discovery, is a legend. That there should be a statue for that person. Because the casting of those three characters to me is up there with like Robert Downey Jr. casting, Winnie the Marvel casting. It's just exceptional. So it's frustrating when the writing doesn't live up to the quality of performers that you have in front of you. You know?
I agree. There's a, I think when it came to Anson Mount, I was excited about that for a few different reasons. Oh. I know you really can figure out how you can judge a person by how they know Anson Mount. Like a lot of people are like, oh, he's from Hell on Wheels. I have never seen Hell on Wheels. And I didn't know. It was like, I just kept thinking, oh, it's that guy from Pool Hall Junkies. You know, that's where I was.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, if you're one of those ones, I know them from the short-lived Marvel show.
Yes, The Inhumans.
Where he never spoke.
good call. That was you know, the thing is, I like that show. I don't care what anybody else said. It was cheesy at times, but I really liked it.
I know they get criticism, but Marvel and DC have both done that version where we had the CW, and then Marvel were doing it with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I liked all of them.
Oh, yeah.
I liked all of them I dug into. You know, I still think Supergirl was a great TV show, Supergirl. We forget about that show. I feel like it came out, people loved it, and then I've just forgotten about it. But I thought it was a wonderful show. I loved Arrow. First two seasons.
Good. The Flash was good for 4 years.
For 4 years. I mean, and that's the problem when you've got serialized television. You're going to have your ups and downs. And I liked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I liked where they were going with that. Yeah. I liked the season when they brought in Ghost Rider. You know, I liked, and Inhumans, I thought it was a bit rough to be cancelled after 8 episodes. Maybe, like, give me a famous TV show from any time in history, show me the first season and tell me that they got it right in the first season. They didn't. No one usually does. Maybe The Flash, probably the first show I watched. I went, that's almost a perfect first season.
I'll agree with you on The Flash. It's the only season I own.
It's hard to pick on that one. Like, it's really well written, that first season. And
it's kind of like, I don't know if you ever watched Heroes, and I know we all know Heroes.
Oh, yeah.
Is like here and then. But
Yeah, no, it was. I watched the first season, second season went, I'm done.
yeah. Season two always made me laugh. The twins. It was like, oh no, I'm
Yeah.
kind of, I feel his pain. It's like, oh come on, just God, kill these guys. But no, season one was perfect. I love season
Yeah.
one. It's like, just watch
Save the
it.
cheerleader to save the world.
Exactly. Watch season one and just be done.
Yeah, and it's, you know what, if you do that, and I've got a mate who did that, like, because he watched it retrospectively and knew it stunk, and he swears by the show. And I'm like, mate, never do it to yourself. Never just try to watch it because you've got the perfect experience right now. All right,
No, I agree. I agree. I mean, hell, imagine what would have happened to Firefly if they would have given them 3 years. You know, would the quality have gone down? Would we have looked at
Well,
it?
that's the first TV box set I ever bought on DVD was Firefly.
Probably, you know what?
Because it was an
Probably the
early
same
box
for
set in
me.
the day of DVDs, yeah.
Yeah, I remember buying that, and actually, I bought two because I bought one for a friend that was unable to afford it, and I was like,
Yeah.
you need to see this. And he's like, well, can
Yeah.
I borrow yours? I was like, I don't like you like that. You know,
Yeah.
I'd rather just buy it for you. But
I always equated Firefly to being like before the movie came out. It was like you got this hot date with this really gorgeous woman, and you got to go out with once, and you thought it was going well, and then that's it. You never get to because that. What a great first season of a show! Like talking about just infusing a whole cast of instant likable characters. You know, more. Like it was every crew member in there. Hey, do you know that both Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk are doing podcasts now because every celebrity is, but they are as well. One I will listen to. Apparently, they've recorded a bunch of shows. They'll be releasing soon, but just those two guys together. You know,
Yeah, I pretty much, if you put their names on something, I'm interested. We watched The Rookie, we watched
Oh yeah.
Resident
I
Alien.
want to watch Rookie. I need to commit to that. I'm committing to Smallville, so I'll eventually go to the Rookie.
The Rookie is worth it.
Well, he's amazing.
There are some problematic, things here and there, but all in all, it's a fun ride. It's got really good heart.
But they're doing 22 episode seasons too, aren't they?
Yeah, some
Network
seasons.
television? Yeah,
Some
like
seasons.
so they have a bigger series order anyway than you get in streaming and you know, they're the problems that come up with every show that has to fill in 22 hours of programming a year. Like, you are gonna miss the mark sometimes, you know? Yeah, I can't even think of like some of the most heralded shows out there. Even Sopranos has a couple episodes that are
Oh,
going,
yeah.
or The
Oh, yeah.
Wire. You know, it's just the way it is, you know?
Now, speaking of things that are kind of bombs, talk about Talking Tubi a little bit.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So basically, before I get to talking to, we probably need to set up that why I decided to do this because this is a response to frustration I've had with our platform, YouTube. So you know, I've been working on Captain's Quadrant for a while as a producer and a co-host, and you know, I had this drive. I was getting very frustrated sometimes our episodes would get copyright struck for the littlest things. Very annoying. Like, and you know, being Australian, I moderate sometimes the language I use online than what I would do in my everyday life. We're a colourful bunch down here. And you know, if you did swear within 30 years, you'd get copyright struck and things like this. So I was getting very frustrated. And honestly, at that time, I felt I wanted to do an individual challenge rather than the team. And I love those boys. I'm back on there now on a part-time basis. But I really wanted to do something myself. So number one was the frustration with the platforms and the restrictions of the YouTube world. The second thing is, I love the idea of the streaming service Tubi, because here we have a streaming service that, unlike every other streaming service, it provides you access to movies that would generally be found in the bottom of a Walmart bin, DVD bin. And you'd pull out this $3 movie, or sorry, $1.50 movie, and you'd be going like, "What is this? This stars who? There are giant spiders and nucleics. Like, oh, what is this?" And so Tubi is a repository for all those wonderfully cheap, high concept disaster movies, action movies. They also have a great library of the old B-grade 80s and 70s catalog. And I love those movies. And the reason I love low budget and that is they're always entertaining, because even if they're unintentionally funny, they're great. Secondly, I love the spirit of independent film. Like, I love the idea that a bunch of people going together with no money, and they've got to come up with a concept that's going to sell the movie and make the money. So generally it means we've got a horror film or a crazy science fiction film or, you know, or an exploitative film. And so the show came born from, well, I'm annoyed at YouTube. I love all these B-grade movies. Let's create a show where I don't care. I don't care about copyright. I don't care about anything to do with that. To hell with it. If they ban it, I'll find another place to show. Even if it means I individually had to send it to people. That's okay. What I'm going to do. So the idea was to do a show of that. So what it is, it's a show that celebrates two films per episode on little-known films you may or may not have heard of. And I celebrate those films. Even if they're horrible films, I celebrate them. And I do it with colourful language. I don't hold back on showing the violence. There is nudity. Now, here's the problem with YouTube. I could show graphic disembowelments. I could show decapitations. I could show the most horrible things. But if a nipple is exposed, then I'm going to get banned. So I do pixelate that. I know, it's a weird world. What can I say? The things that give life, you know, the things that was our probably first original source of food as human beings, that's too offensive for YouTube. So I do pixelate them. But I do a show that's just, you know, funny. I like to think it's funny. It's raw me. You know, I want to celebrate that type of film. I have a AI character that works with me called AI Arnold. And that's almost a commentary on AI at the moment and where it could go and where it is disastrously wrong at the moment. But he's a fun character because he's not supposed to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. And anyway, he's AI Arnold. And this AI Arnold is extremely mean. So we have a bit of back and forward banter. But I love doing it. It reminds me of being a theatre kid. I'm putting on a show. And I'm going to do it my way. And I don't care what the response is. Surprisingly enough, the response has been very positive. People kind
well,
of
that's good.
I also do, like, I'm stealing from James Gunn here. I take a lot of pride in the mic drop, the music drops I put in the episodes, and I do. And I preface it by saying, you know, hey, go to these artists, support these artists. Make sure that you're giving these guys the Spotify thing, whatever. But I have some of the great music from the last 40, especially 70s and 80s. I integrate just really great soundtracks, which you can access if you go to my Spotify. I have them as compilations. So first season, I'm making a big first season compilation where you'll be able to go through and listen to all them. Even if you don't like my show, but you like the music I use, you'll be able to get access to that. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoy doing it.
We'll make sure the links are down below for everybody.
Absolutely. So the plan is to have 10 episode seasons. So I'm currently on episode 8 of season 1. I've got another one in the can and one more to do. And then I'll move straight into season 2, which is the reason I have seasons is there's some significant upgrades every season. Excuse me. Sorry, I had a cough there.
That's fine.
And I plan to do 10 years, 10 seasons over 10 years. That's the grand plan. And it's kind of for me. The fact that other people love it, delightful, is amazing. But really, I'm making it selfishly for me.
The curious thing, and I've been curious about this since day one, have you had any blowback from Tubi themselves?
No, they seem to be really supportive. And well, I made sure they were the first people to do it. No bad, absolute. And if you see even my logo, it's a reminder, but I'm not stealing any of their artwork. And I never badmouth too, because there is nothing to badmouth with that streaming service at all. I'm a massive fan. So in a way, it's a fan show of the streaming service, because it's also a streaming service that is not raising its prices every 6 months, Netflix. I'm talking to you, Netflix, and every other streaming service. It's free. You got to watch a couple of ads through the movie. Big deal.
Yeah, we haven't had Netflix in about 6 years. It's been about six years.
I got rid of it earlier this year.
Yeah, and but I love Pluto. I Tubi, I have Tubi, but I love Pluto.
Yep.
Mainly because I like to play the Star Trek roulette, where I turn it on, see what's on there, and like, all right, that's my Star Trek
Yeah.
today, you know.
Yeah, I've got a mate, he's right into anime. Crunchyroll is all his jam.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now the Crunchyroll, like, we had it for a little while, but that was just like I wanted to use it for watching like Inuyasha and stuff like that, you
Yeah.
know. And then eventually that goes over to another streaming service. When they move things, it gets more difficult, you know.
Yeah.
But
Listen, yeah, like it's like I'm very proud of talking to Tubi as a show just because I'm very much a team player. I love working collaboratively and 99% of the stuff I do. But this, I'm surprised as I've been doing it, and it's a lot of work. Like it's a lot of work to do what I've got to do, just so many clips and I'm, you know, doing these editing things, like it takes a while. It's just a yeah, it's kind of a singular expression. I didn't know I needed it until I started doing it. But that doesn't take away from the other channels that I'm involved with. Obviously, Captain's Quadrant, definitely was involved really early on. Tried to set some of the visual element to it and the show. If you notice, every show I'm on, I try to bring something different, whether it's a silly seg. I always bring a silly segment, whether it's a game or the Galaxy of Stars, which I did this season,
I gotta be
or.
honest with you, I was a little saddened that there was no Galaxy of Stars for the episode I was on. I
I
was
know, but the problem was, is yeah, we couldn't logistically. Yeah, actually, next episode of Galaxy of Stars. Jason doesn't know this yet, or Joe, but it will be a return of our most popular characters that we've done this year. We have to make him come back. So that's a fun idea. And look, I straight up stole that idea from Conan, right? Like that's just me going like, let's do the Conan gag on here because I think it works, and we got someone who's really good at voices, like. That's a no-brainer, right?
It's an homage.
It's an homage. It's an
Yeah.
homage. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, look, what did Picasso say? Good artists borrow, great artists steal.
Yeah,
So
there you go. There you go.
there you go. Yeah. So that's always a bit of fun. I always try to make it a bit different because I found with Star Trek podcasts, and there are some people who are definitely doing different things now, and they're the shows I tend to lean towards. The only other problem I have is there's a lot that are the same where we get on, we talk about our feelings, it's not really structured, and it turns into a discussion of techno babble or whatever. And it's played pretty straight. It's not a show for me. And I thought, well, there's so many of them. My initial idea for Captain's Quadrant was if they go left, we'll go right. Won't that keep us separate? So let's try to make it funny, goofy. Let's add these little kind of segments in. Let's try to. You know, giveaways and things like that. That's just an attempt to kind of make it different, you know?
Well, it's entertaining, and that's what brought me in. Like, you know, it caught my attention. I checked it out. I watched it. I keep coming back. And it's not that I don't go to
Really appreciate it too.
I
Yeah.
don't go to other, I mean, I do go to other podcasts and I do watch other live videos and I enjoy them, but it's not always the atmosphere that, you know, it's conducive to what I want to go to.
We
And
try to create a happy vibe, yeah.
yeah, and I dig
Yeah,
that.
we do that. And we love each other. We really love each other. I love Joe to death. Joe has become one of my great friends. And same with Jason. So the banter that we have, the little friendly ribbing that we get each other, it's all part of that mosaic, you know, of the show. And yeah, like the fact that we're perfectly imperfect works a lot for us too. Is just the fact that we're never quite right. We're close, but we never get it quite right. I'm a big fan of that kind of concept. I think it makes us more relatable, to be honest with you. And it's a competitive market out there, don't you think, at the moment? I mean, not only do you have so many Star Trek podcasts done by fans, we're now competing against stars of Star Trek having their own podcasts. So
I agree. And the competitiveness is there, but like for me personally, I've kind of looked at it like I'm not competing with anybody. I'm not out
Oh
here
no.
to compete. My point is to, I'm trying to find a good word. I want to push boost the signal. I mean, for lack of better terms, like I don't want to ever compete with Captain's Quadrant or the Sci-Fi
No.
Sisters or the Voyager podcast. I love all of these. They're wonderful and they're doing everything. It's kind of like the same thing with like Trek Culture, Trek Central. I will share their content. I will
Yeah.
make sure I brand my share with their
Yeah.
logo so people know who it is, because I'm not here to help me. I want to help everyone else. And
That is very evident with all the stuff. And I remember even early on, you supported Talking To being promoted immediately. And you do that to just be on Star Trek, that you're about lifting people up. And I think that makes sure what you're doing here and on your Instagram channel not only unique, but kind of important to the community at this point, because we need all the help we can get. And when you talk about marketing and competing, it really comes down to just wanting to get as many eyes on your show as possible. I mean, really, that's what it's down to. You know, that's what I'm always about. I just want you to see it. If you don't like it, totally cool. Like, I'm totally cool with that. But the battle is like the awareness of it to make the choice whether you don't like it or not. And obviously, there are algorithms at play. There are things like that. So when we have like content creator like yourself, who's all about, now let's give the little guys a bit of a. But just let people know that these guys are out here. That's all you're trying to do is like, did you know about these guys? Mate, that means a lot, you know? And I know that I've gotten a few extra subscribers and things like that from things that you've shared and stuff like that. And it's great.
Well, then
And it
mission
was good for
accomplished.
us. It gives us a little bit more confidence that we're kind of on the right track. Because if you share, you don't come across as someone who's going to share anything that is problematic or offensive in real time, or if you guys know that these guys, well, they're a bunch of jerks, you're not kind of into that. So there's a lot of goodness that comes out of what you do, and you seem to be targeting the right people, including myself. So
I appreciate that. I've had a few people come and tell me like, "Oh, you shouldn't share that person or that individual's problematic." And I always tell them the same thing. They haven't shown me that yet, and I don't want to judge someone based upon another's voice. If I see that they're problematic, if I see they're doing something that doesn't gel with what I think the community would want or me, I'm not going to share their stuff, you know.
that's
And
right.
even if I don't share someone's something, I'm going to give you a like if I like it. I'm going to do what I can to help boost you a little bit. Because
It's so great because there are a lot. You talked about someone who was being, saying this person problematic. That's something when I got back in the Star Trek fandom 3 years ago that I was shocked. I got into something called Trek Talk early on. That was my pathway back into fandom. And I was shocked at the problematic things that were being said and the accusations on people and the drama. I wasn't, maybe because I was in my late 40s getting back into it, I just assume that's a young, like it's a kid's thing. And, if we all love Star Trek, how could you be like hateful and accusatory? But they're there. They're there. In fact, I don't really get on TikTok a lot anymore because I found that a cesspool of negativity and accusations.
I'm not even on there. Yeah,
I like
I,
Instagram. I
yeah.
only just started getting Instagram this year, but everyone has been freaking cool.
Yeah, well, that's
Like
good.
everyone I've met has been really great. So that's the platform I'm trying to grow now. I've got 28,000 followers over on TikTok. But I'm happy to start with my nearly 400 followers on Instagram and stick with those guys, to be honest with you.
Well, I'd like to see your 400 get to 28,000, or
Oh, it'd be nice. It'd be
I
nice. I mean, it was an exciting week when that happened because I'm unlike my other colleagues, the irrepressible Jason Roy Gaston, who has over nearly, what, 500,000 TikTok followers, nearly 400. Like, he's very well known. I'm not at all. So when that happened, I was like, oh, wow, there you go. I felt like Sally Field when she got an Oscar. You like me. You actually like me. That's an old reference. No
No,
one's going to know that
I'm 48 years old. I get the
reference. So you get,
reference. Yeah.
yeah. No, so it is like it's nice to be recognized. I mean, like, let's face it, if we podcast, we're creative people. Inbuilt into us at a very DNA level is insecurity a little bit and wanting to be validated. I absolutely believe that. And I don't think that's a bad thing either. So when you are recognized and you think you are of value, it does a lot of good for people. From a mental, you've seen people who maybe out in the real world that get maybe wouldn't be accepted. But the online fandom, man, we're far more open to inclusivity and celebrating people, no matter what the restrictions are or any disabilities they have or any perspectives I have. So it's, yeah, mostly, except for the trolls that I just spoke about, online's going to be very positive for people who have, you know. Well, and the thing is, a lot of people don't know about Australia. We're a very conservative country who don't accept change or differences very well as a culture. It's true. People deny it, but we are. We're conservative. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if there's something new that comes around the corner, where we will, yeah.
So no electric cars.
Yeah. Not all of us, but, you know, I mean, you know, I've got a trans cousin, you know, who is now my age. So they've been, you know, going through this journey ever since they were a boy, you know, and they've gone through this 40-year journey, and the level of acceptance that wasn't there for them in 1990. Much of the family thought there was, you know, but over the years and all that type of thing, you know, there was a level of acceptance, but poor Tony, she had to really go through a real tough scenario socially. You know, but weirdly enough, Australians, I think by the 80s and early 90s, were like, you know, we're cool. We were genuinely cool with people if you don't try to enforce things on us. You know, it's all about language with us. We're really weird about it. So we're very conservative in nature, but when we do accept people, we do accept people. But it's not easy. You know what I mean? Like, I was a fat kid. You're not accepted if you're a fat kid in Australia. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're not accepted if you're a nerd, mate. If I talked about watching Star Trek when I was 15 and 16, guarantee you, and pardon my language, I would have gotten beaten the shit out of. There is, without question, in my community, and that I couldn't even come out and say I like Star Wars or Star Trek. I was just in a very conservative kind of place, and that could have been just the community I was around. But we do struggle as a nation sometimes jumping on board early. We do. We get there in the end, but we do struggle. So,
Glad you're here now.
Well, I think so. I mean, like I said, the trans community here in Australia is very well accepted. Very well accepted. I mean, you know, for us, it's like, are you a good person?
Yeah.
That is the line here.
Yeah.
We don't, like, 99% of Australians don't care about skin pigmentation or how you want to present yourself. We are in a free country. You have every right to live the life the way you want to do. And guess what? We're going to be cool with you and treat you with respect and be nice. All we want to know, are you a good person or a bad person?
Yeah, I understand.
You're nasty to people, you're going to be good to people.
I pretty much tell people the same thing. As long as you're not here to stab me, I'm okay. You know, it's like, yep, it's a low level, but, you know.
It doesn't matter, right? Because there are good people and bad people, no matter where you come from the background. So that is the one thing I'm struggling with the media around the US at the moment, is the perception that you guys are very anti-everything. Like, the way social media is being portrayed, I find down here in Australia, is that you're a confrontation, you're unaccepting, you've gone back 30 or 40 years in regards to race relations and acceptance level. You know, we see TikToks about reversing gay marriage and this turning back of time. And it's really hard for us, I think, internationally, to try to sift through what's real and what isn't.
The thing is,
terrifying. Sorry.
I'm sorry. The thing is, as someone that lives here, I say this. There is a unfortunate amount of people that are going backwards, but then there are people that are not, and we do our best to vote the way we want. Sometimes it feels like that's not going to help. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to deal with what's being said and what's being heard, and it's hard to not be angry about it when there's nothing we can do about it except wait for it to change, hope that it can change, and hope that people will see that the things they're saying are hurtful. It's not about It's not about the now, it's about the then, and it's going to be about the what's going to happen. And too many people focus on now and wanting something that was. And
It's
but
a
I don't want to, I don't,
complex, difficult situation. All I would say around that is you guys need to be like Australia and have mandatory voting. I think it would be really good for America that by law you have to go vote.
Well,
And I'm a big
I'm not.
believer in that.
I'm going to do my darndest not to get political on here. I'm
Sorry,
going
I
to
didn't.
say, hey, don't you love Star Trek? But
Well, that's political as you can get, right? I mean, I would like to think
Star Trek has
my.
always been political. Star Trek has always been
Yeah, and I tell
political.
you what, a lot of my morals and attitudes towards things today has come directly from the next generation.
I would say,
Directly.
yeah, oh yeah, I'm
Because
right
you
in the
know what
same
was
boat with
great
you.
about that is they present you the issue and they always give you multiple sides and then give you the resolution. And they don't preach. They just gave you the information and they told their narrative story, but you could go away and still have a differentiating of opinion. Look at
Yeah.
Tuvix. Look at Voyager, the episode Tuvix. The most beautifully political episode ever. It's about social politics
Tuvix.
and identity, but it is amazing, right? It is
Yeah.
incredible. And that's, I mean, look, I have Star Wars tattooed on my arm because I am a Star Wars kid. First film, 1977, I ever saw was Star Wars at the cinema. But when it comes to that's the fun side, but the intellectual side, it's all about 1987 to 2005, I would say. It's a lot of I think my education and my perception on life and what I think about things was driven by the knowledge I picked up and the questions asked in Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, and Enterprise.
I've always been a DS9 guy. I'm a Sisko guy through and
Yeah.
through. He's my captain, and I've always said that if I was to ever be a captain in Starfleet, I'd be Sisko. I'd be the compassionate guy, willing to listen, and if I have to kick some ass, I'll kick some ass. And
Well,
that's, you
that's
know.
the thing about Sisko. He will go against his own moral code to do what's best.
Yeah,
And that
poison
takes
a
a special
planet.
type of character. What do you think they're gonna do? Like a sore that needs a band-aid on it because I don't think you can do anything else is how do we deal with Sisko? Like, how do
Okay.
we? Because I think the only way is to recast.
Okay, yes. In a perfect world, recast, do the story. I mean, and recasting is nothing new to Star Trek. It's not like it's going to be like, oh, how dare they? As long as it's not an Asian or a white person taking the role, we should be okay. Because, you know, it should be an African American male. But my point is, what I worry that's going to happen is they're going to take the whole theoretical Christ-like character that he is and just never do anything and say, you know, like, you know, how many times throughout your life have you heard, you know, Jesus will return, or if, you know, for people that are religious and or whatever. And it's like, but
When is
so is
it?
Sisko going to be the same thing, you know,
You
or
know how I
waiting?
would tackle it?
Yeah.
I would kind of tackle that as his character is similar. Maybe not split him into two like they did with the sequel to Twin Peaks, but the idea of him coming out of that, him coming through, kind of being lost. It should be a journey about him rediscovering his soul, which then allows for a physical change slightly. So no one's going to question that. And then an emotional journey that he could go on. And so the end of that story arc should be that he's kind of back in his own way, but it should be a different Sisko, a more balanced, a less aggressive, and maybe a smart. You know, there should be some evolution. If they're bringing him back, we have to evolve the character to make him interesting.
Have
And
you
I
seen
think,
a? Oh, no, go on. No, please.
no, go on. No, I've kind of finished there.
I'm thinking what you're saying, you know, and I'm thinking about the show John from Cincinnati. I don't know if you ever saw that or
No, I
not.
never watched that.
Really good
No.
show. Totally recommend it.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance to see it, or at least read a synopsis about it, and think of it like what you're saying in the regards of that show, it would be
Yeah.
a really good way of handling the entire
Yep.
situation.
Yeah. I think you need to, and I think if you remember the rumor, to touch on another, you should go back and watch Captain's Quadrant. I did speak about the fact that there are current negotiations going on between Paramount and Alex Kurtzman, and they're looking at new production companies. The Paramount deal, and they are very keen on things like this. It's not just Star Trek Legacy they want to make happen. They understand, I think, what the audience desire is a bit more at the moment. I think they've got their finger on the pulse of what the audience wants. So I think absolutely Cisco is going to be dealt with in a meaningful way. And I think that's what we all want. I don't know if the reason there hadn't been could have been contract negotiations or some sort of deal where, maybe they couldn't recast for a while or whatever, but now it's time. Now it's time. See, I believe that with Star Wars too. I believe that right now they should be recasting Luke. They've got Han. Bring back our Alden Ehrenreich. I like him. And Leia, recast, and let's do our Disney Plus show. Let's do the movie. Let's do a series set between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back. Let's do it. That's what the
I think
fans want.
Sebastian Stan would be good as Luke. He
Yeah,
makes
he
a,
would be.
yeah, just,
He would be.
he has a,
Without question, he would be. Yeah, he'd
yeah.
be really good. And for Leia, there's just so many great actresses out there. You could plug into that. But why not do that? And then why not do that with Trek and things like that? See, the dancing around of fandom, the dancing around of trying to draw in those member berries for everybody. Don't dance around it. Don't do a show that's going, remember this other show? Remember this? Just do it. Just do
Yeah.
it. And you're either going to fail or you're going to succeed, but you will at least have the respect of your audience because they will know that you've taken a swing, an authentic swing. And I think that's probably the frustration I have a lot of writing in today, is it feels like the writers sometimes think they're smarter than the audience they're serving. This isn't the audience of 1976 where they didn't have all the knowledge. They didn't have the prior experience of that. This is the audience of 2025, and we know a few things about things. And so we're higher as a society, we're higher intellectually just because of the world we live in. Writing needs to reflect that. And these studios need to be looking at it like that. And a lot of them are. A lot of shows like Alien Earth, we can talk about shows like Chernobyl, you talk about some of them. They operate Andor season two. They operate at a level that we love. That's the type of storytelling that is gravitating towards us. Just need more of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Jace, it's been going on for about an hour now. I'm gonna have
Has.
to.
It's gone on for an hour. Let's tie it up, my friend. I love
was like,
talking to you, Ed. I can talk to you all
no,
day. So.
I could talk to you forever too. And then a lot of it's gonna be like, okay, now how are we gonna recast this show? And what, I could talk to you all day about Star Trek for sure. I don't really think we talked a lot of Star Trek in this, and that, which is great. And I love that because I wanted to get to know you, and I wanted to have the ability for you to talk to everybody else and share
I really
you.
appreciate the opportunity. I really do. And yes, you can absolutely find me over in the Captain's Quadrant as a guest host. I primarily live in two worlds at the moment. I love to promote. That is obviously Talking Tubi, which please check out over on there at Talking Tubi. It's a pretty easy thing to find. And
Links
the
down
other place
below.
where I absolutely love and spend a lot of time with is the Jason Roy Gaston channel. You may not know him by name, but I'm pretty sure one out of five of you look at him and go, I've seen that guy on TikTok. We do about five or six shows on his channel and we have a blast. It's crazy to think a little old guy from South Australia happened to meet this crazy Texan teacher. And we get along like a house on fire and we have a lot of fun. So there are two places you can find me, Jason Roy Gaston channel at YouTube and at Talking Tubi. And of course at Captain's Quadrant.
I love it. Yeah, I hope I want that 28,000 followers for you.
Oh, I would love
It's like
that. I absolutely would love that. I actually got asked the other day about starting a Patreon, which I never even conceived of doing. But I might be starting a Patreon with season two of Talking Tubi, where you'll get access to uncut versions of the show.
well, there you go.
So,
I
well, everybody's perverted, so they'll pay the money. I'm only kidding.
It's something that I always said I didn't want to do for this, but it's like I'm starting to understand just how this what is
A
that
lot of it's
called?
not about
Money.
profit. But it's
Yeah,
not about
well,
profit.
not
It's
about
about
profit, it's about keeping this
sustainability.
going. Yeah, I
Yeah, it's
mean,
about sustainability. It's about paying for services, because if you don't realize, like, we use something called StreamYard. That ain't cheap.
no.
And a lot of the stuff we use isn't cheap. Like I've got access to libraries and things like that, for audio, video, and all that. That's because I'm a video editor and I've already purchased it for my business.
Yeah.
But if I didn't have that, there's another $60 a month you have to come. So a lot of, I think you find 95% of people do Patreon at the level we are. We're just trying to keep it going.
Yeah, and
And
I
we
feel
appreciate
that.
it so much.
Yeah, I feel that. I but yeah, everybody, please go check out Jace, check out Talking Tubi, check out the Captain's Quadrant. It just, click those links down below, give them a follow, give them a like, check out the content, because you're not going to be disappointed. If you are disappointed, it's not my fault. It's
That'd be my fault. I love that. I also offer a service. I create podcast packages. I've had a few clients over the years now. So if you are ever looking to start a podcast, I create intros, segment bumpers, thumbnail templates, backgrounds, the whole thing. So
That's
if you
awesome.
like what you see on my channel, you'll be able to send me a message. And if you mention that you saw me on this show, I'll offer you 30% discount off of the product, and that's a big chunk of. So I do it at a very affordable cost for people. I help get them started, and because if you mention this show you saw me on, you'll get a third off.
There you go. There you go. Well, I appreciate your time. I appreciate everything, taking your time out. I know it's We have a really weird time difference here. It's
It's fine. It's
what
fine.
would it be there? Is it like
It is
1:30?
currently 11:30 a.m. So after this,
11:30.
I'll go make myself a sandwich for lunch.
I'm
So,
gonna go to bed.
yeah, here you go. You'll be going to sleep. So, no, that's what also I love about it too. It's just because of the time difference between here and the US. It's actually worked as a podcasting thing. I do it in the morning, you guys do it at night.
There you go.
Lovely.
Well, I appreciate your time, and thank you for being here and
Thank you for having
everything
me.
else. Oh, you're very welcome, and live long and prosper.
Absolutely. We'll speak soon.